Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. We have the coveted 9 a.m. session after the conference party, so appreciate everybody showing up here. My name's Adam Harmetz. I'm a program manager on the Enterprise Content Management team on the SharePoint engineering team. With me today is Zach.
Hi, I'm Zach Rosenfield. I'm a program manager on the SharePoint Data Center team.
So put our two jobs together, and we can tell you about best practices for ECM in the cloud. Let's start off with a little bit of what we're going to cover today. So it's interesting, when we put together this talk, it was, we've marched along the path of bringing more and more of our features to the cloud, and so we looked at it, and you almost could have gone to the ECM overview session to find out best practices for ECM in the cloud, because for the most part, all these features just work. And so we were wondering how to sort of keep it interesting and what to do. And so we broke this talk down into two parts, so you sort of see two sections of this talk. Part one, we're going to start with a pretty much blank tenant. So you could go to office.com/preview and within minutes get one of the things we'll be starting with. We did a little bit of cooking show prep work just for things that were going to take longer than we could afford to demo. And we're going to build it up until we have basically full advanced ECM solutions. And so I think you'll see just how easy it is to get going with ECM in the cloud. And hopefully learn a couple things along the way. So we thought that would be maybe a more creative way of showing you some of the features in ECM. And then the second part is as we look at it, as we design features today for SharePoint 2013 and going forward, as from a cloud-centric and a cloud-first model, I think we learned some principles about software design and some principles that will impact your ECM strategy. And so the last half of the talk, rather than just showing you feature after feature, we sort of have these four principles, and we'll go through small vignettes for each one that powerfully demonstrate each principle. So that's what you should expect today. That's what we're going to do. And so let's get started. We have this is just the generic ECM slide. If you went to, actually, let me ask, how many people went to Jim and Tejas's ECM overview yesterday? So not everybody. That's good. We'll sort of split the difference between it being review and it being new for some people. But when we talk about ECM, let's just get on the same page as what we mean. Sort of scenario-wise, it's about creating content, controlling it, and then protection and compliance around it. Another way of spinning this might be to say, I sometimes think and break down the ECM umbrella term into records management and compliance, including e-discovery as one chunk. Document management, so spec libraries, the feature of doc sets, people probably all know and love. And then knowledge management, which is sort of like document management, growing up to more reusable and repurposable content to share enterprise knowledge throughout the company. So we'll touch on all of those today. We'll probably touch a little less on knowledge management because Lincoln Damaris did a session yesterday that pretty well explain the distinction between on-prem and cloud knowledge management. If you didn't get a chance to see that, I would suggest you watch the video. It's actually currently the highest rated session so far, I believe, as of last night. And then the other important thing to understand when we talk about ECM is I sort of break it down, certainly in SharePoint and I think generically, into three key places where content is stored. There's the personal space, so that's SkyDrive Pro. Maybe formally called My Sites, so people understand what we're talking about. And then on the other side, there's the organizational spaces. Those are the knowledge management repositories, record centers, things that are one give or take for an enterprise, or at least for a large department. And then right in the middle, there's team. Typical team sites, ad hoc project collaboration. And of course, pretty central to Microsoft's ECM strategy is breaking down walls and providing compliance, control, and protection across all three of these spaces. So when we say enterprise content management, we don't just mean those large organizational archives. I think some of our competitors might skew towards that. We really mean coordinated ECM across all three. And so I think you'll see us tap dance between all three of these different spaces today. So with that, I'm going to let Zach take us through the customer we'll be talking about today and get started.
All right. Thank you, Adam. So first thing we want to talk about today is to give you an example customer. We're going to go through a bunch of different numbers and a bunch of different artifacts of what it means to be in Office 365. And for reference, we want to have a customer to talk about. And so this way I can just reference this set of numbers, and we can all sort of have a baseline for what we're talking about. So we're going to talk about Contoso Shipping in this. This is a fake customer. They have 10,000 licensed users in the cloud. They have 1,000 enterprise users. These are the heavy users. They're using SkyDrive Pro. They're using Team Sites. They're using all the great ECM functionality that's in the cloud. We also have 9,000 kiosk users. Those are users who aren't necessarily creating content constantly, but still need access to maybe the documents, the manifests in Office 365. But Contoso is a big company. Lots of user objects, lots of AD objects. We're tracking all sorts of information in our system. So Contoso is a fake company, but we do want to say there are lots of real companies using Office 365 for their business today. So this is not something new. This is not something that you'll be the first at or that your customer would be the first at. We have lots of large organizations who depend on Office 365 for our wide range of SharePoint functionality that's available today and are onboarding into the new 2013 feature set that's being rolled out in the next upgrade of Office 365. So with that, we're going to jump into a bit of a demo. And today, I'm going to focus primarily on the admin side of things. So we're going to talk about what it's like to get started with Office 365, how you onboard your large business, what are the different checkpoints and numbers that you should be aware of when you're making that decision. And also, just I want to give an example of really how easy it is to onboard and quickly get going with Office 365. And you can go and try these things yourself as soon as you leave here. This is actually running off of the Office 365 2013 preview. It's available online. Anyone can go sign up for it now. So if you haven't signed up already, this is the Admin Control Center. It is the portal.microsoftonline.com for large enterprise SKUs. And you can see it has a bunch of information around the health of the service in the middle. It has a bunch of useful information on the right, but this is where you go to set up your business. This is the first place you're going to end up when you sign up for Office 365. Now, normally if you're onboarding your business, you would set up your domains first. Also, it's generally recommended you set up single sign-on as the first thing you do. That allows you to keep control over usernames and passwords on-premise, and also to give the best single sign-on experience to your end users. But for the sake of today, I'm just going to show you directory sync and how quickly we can get users into the cloud. So you see here, I've actually gone and already turned on Active Directory Sync. It was just a button, but it takes a tiny bit to process, and I didn't want to force you folks to sit and watch it spin. But once you click that, you're able to set up directory sync pretty easily. And so what I've done is back on a VM at home, I've run this tool called the directory readiness toolkit. And this is available. You can go download it today. You run it against your Active Directory, and it's going to output a report that looks like this. It's going to have all the information. It's effectively a checklist of all the things you need to do to onboard. Now, I have a test Active Directory. It has 1,000 users, not a lot of information, just the one domain, which is the directory domain itself. So there's not a whole lot for me to go do. But if you had multiple domains, if you had a lot of information, it would tell you, and the numbers we'll talk about in a minute, they feed directly from this information. So effectively, you have all the data you need to answer those questions right up front. So once you've done that, I just have a VM that I set up. I installed the directory synchronization wizard, and you'll see it's a pretty straightforward thing. So we're here doing our ECM cloud demo, and I need to log in with the admin account. Always fun to type passwords in front of a few hundred people. And what this is doing is actually going out and making sure that my account is properly configured in the cloud to access the information. And similarly, I need to have access to the domain, to the actual Active Directory locally. And once I do, we're not going to do an Exchange Hybrid, but there is an Exchange Hybrid option, and it's going to configure. So this is actually going, wiring up the endpoints, and usually just takes a couple of seconds. There we are. And I'm going to go ahead and tell it to synchronize right away. Now, there's a bunch of information here that you're going to want to go look at around how you verify your Active Directory. This is important because what this actually is doing is it's pushing not just your users and their names across, it's pushing all of your AD information. So this is where the org chart is getting filled in from. This is where all the information about your users that makes search so rich, that makes all the profile information so rich, this is all pushing that data to the cloud. So that should have run, and I should be able to come back here. And it should have, try refreshing one more time. All right, we'll have to come back to that. So it's actively in the background pushing the data in. It can take a minute or two before it comes up if there's a lot of data to process. We'll check back in a second. Once the users show up, though, it's pretty easy to actually add them to the online service. By default, not everyone gets licensed. So in our Contoso example, we had a lot of users that we were bringing in. But we don't necessarily want everyone to have access, and we don't necessarily want them to have access until we've set it up for them. There's a set of steps we want to go through and make sure that the site is ready. And until that's there, we don't want to have everyone using it. And so you'll see it's once they are ready, it's simply a matter of checking their name and activating the user account. I'll try refreshing one more time here. There we are. So here's a bunch of my test users. And when I'm ready for them to come, I can just activate them. And you'll see it'll give me the full suite of options that I can go through and decide what features they need and when. So quick recap. We saw Active Directory Sync. The Deployment Readiness Toolkit is the best place to start. Once you run that, it's going to give you information about your Active Directory, how large it is, and what information that you need to know to ensure your initial onboarding experience goes smoothly. There is a 50,000 object default that you should be aware of. If you have more than 50,000 objects, and the Readiness Toolkit will tell you this, you want to be prepared. It's actually going to stop. And we just want to make sure that there's a real human there and that you're not just pumping data into our system. And so you can actually call us in advance. You can call support, or you can wait for the toolkit to alert you to that fact. But once you do, you just tell us the actual number that you have in your toolkit, and you can continue with your onboarding. Also, just be aware, 100,000 user objects a day is just the rate of onboarding. So if you have a very large enterprise, be aware you either want to filter down the information that you sync, which is functionality that we have available, or just prepare for the multiple days it will take for that one-time initial onboarding. All right, right back to demos. So next thing I want to show is all around SharePoint. So the admin console is available just directly from anywhere in SharePoint. If you are the admin and you have the rights, you'll be able to see that link showing up wherever you are. And it's going to take you to what we call the tenant administration console for SharePoint. It's the SharePoint Admin Center for Office 365. And here's where people spend most of their time. This is the site collection administration page. You see a list of sites that we've created. But before we go into this page, I just want to call your attention to some of these things on the left. We have lots of admin controls here for you to configure SharePoint Online to fit your business needs. The important ones for ECM scenarios, Term Store, same great feature set that's available in Office 365 today, available on-prem, is available also in the future release. We have records management, which we'll discuss in a minute. But I also really want to emphasize Office 365 has the same brand new search core that's in SharePoint 2013. And all the admin controls are here. There's lots of great stuff. I won't dig into this because this is getting a little bit too much into the search forum. But there are some great search talks that have happened this week. Lots of information online. Highly recommend you check it out. There's great stuff here. So jump back to site collections. And the first thing I want to emphasize is something that I'm very excited about here in this next wave. is I can tell you today that, you know, you may have heard, but if not, I'd like to announce for the first time that record centers, the same great feature that are available in SharePoint 2007, upgraded in 2010, are available now in the next release of Office 365 in SharePoint Online. So I won't dig into what the feature is too much itself. I'm hoping you already know. But this is a record center. I just wanted to emphasize this is running in SharePoint.com. This is online in Office 365. Available for use, very important for onboarding and having your record center online if you're going to be using Office 365. So what I do want to show, though, is for Contoso, which needs a record center, but also has scale. You know, for this example, we could say we have a document for every single container. We have all sorts of docs that we're storing. Well, one record center, which in Office 365, can be up to 100 gigs, which on average might be around 350,000 documents, which for some businesses might be enough. For us, we know that Contoso needs more right now. Now, this is something you can decide to do later, but we're going to do it up front and say we're going to go way beyond that number, and we need to take advantage of a feature called distributive archiving. This was available in 2010. I'm going to show you how to set it up, though, now that we have this available in Office 365. So I've already created the site collections. Anytime I wanted to add another record center, you'll see that record center does show up in the list of available templates. But I didn't want to make you wait for those to provision. But here are my 4 years worth of record centers. But I don't want my users to have to know which record center archive that they need to end up in. And so what we've done here is we've created what's called a hub site. This is my records site. And users only interact with that site. To them, there's only one record center. But in the background, we are going to actually file things away according to the year they're created. And so I've created record centers for 2010, 2011, 2012, and then for the upcoming 2013. And at any time, I can go ahead and manage these just like I would any other site collection. So for example, if 1,000 megabytes is probably not enough, so I'm going to go up to 2,000 across these. I can actually bulk update. And that just takes a second to process. And you'll see it'll show up here in just a second. So I've updated the quota for those sites. They can now hold more information. So other thing that has to get done is I have to actually configure the record center. So what I'm going to do is come over here to the record center option, records management option in the admin center. And you'll see that I have my core record center created, which is at that records location. And I have left this box checked. And what this box means is this is what users see. They can send stuff to that location. And when they do, what is the behavior? And the default here for me is move and leave a link. So we're going to actually move that document to the record center, and we're going to leave a link where the original document was so that emails still work, so that anyone who knows that existing location, it still functions. But adding another one is very easy. I can add 2013, for example. You just give the URL of the site, you don't have to actually include the full link. And I uncheck this box, because in this 2013, I'm going to do this behind the scenes. I'm going to route this according to their content type and the years that it was created. I don't need that to actually be available. And it'll just get added, and we can expand our archive. Yeah, of course.
Can you turn up my mic for a second? So it's just worth pointing out that in this particular example, we distributed by year, which is probably pretty common and something we sort of recommend. But you know, the full power of the content organizer to route by any piece of metadata is available here too. So you can distribute your archive by department or any taxonomy call, you know, whatever you think is most appropriate. I figured I'd point that out and make that clear. Year is pretty typical and makes sense to me, but you know, it's going to depend on your particular business requirements.
Perfect. Thank you, Adam. So one other feature I want to show. We have this new send to site option available. You may have seen it demoed before, where any user can go and create a site. And this is what's called a subweb. It's just a place for them to do work. It could be about projects. It could be information. Well, we don't necessarily want the company to just have these sites get created endlessly. We want to have some level of policy control over it, so we ensure that we don't end up in situations where we're holding on to documents that would make us liable. We don't want to necessarily hold on to information forever that would potentially make search freshness become stale. We don't necessarily want information to just sit around if it's not being used. And so we have the ability with this new start a site feature, which Adam will actually show you in a little bit, to enforce policy on that site and ensure that our systems can track what our users are doing with that information. And so this is the root site where those subsites are getting created. I haven't done anything to this site. It's just the default. Obviously, you can do whatever you want with this site to help folks understand what this root site is all about. But I just want to really quickly show you how easy it is to add policy. So I just come into site settings, and there's a policy link. I've already gone and created two. So here at Contoso, we're going to have HBI, which is our high business impact stuff. We're going to have projects, which are things that live potentially around a year. But I'm also going to create one new one and say that we're going to have projects that are short-lived. And these are quick 1 month projects. Maybe someone's going to work with a vendor for a period of time. Maybe we're going to have a project for one of our ships that's special. These are things that don't necessarily need to stick around for a long time. And so I can actually set a policy. I can set them to not do anything, which is probably what I would do for something that is HBI. But for this, I'm going to actually go ahead and close them, which gives the admin an opportunity, or sorry, the user an opportunity to extend and start and keep their information around for longer. But I have a lot of flexibility here in what I can do. And so I'm going to go ahead and say that 3 months after they create it, the thing locks down. And I check this box, so it actually becomes read-only, becomes very aware to the user. This thing is in a special state. And then 1 month after that, I'm going to go ahead and delete it. And you'll see I can configure when they get emails. I can configure the follow-up notifications. And I can also configure how long they can keep this site around at requests. I think we'll have time for the questions at the end. But so I'm going to go ahead and click OK. And you'll see we now have three policies created. And the last thing I need to do for this is I need to actually come to Tenant Admin and tell the system to use it. So if I go here to Settings, and hopefully our network is still functioning. Try this. Well, when this comes up, the main thing to know is I have the ability to configure to turn this on so that I can enforce that users must select a policy. But I also have the ability to provide my own form template. So if you have a custom piece of metadata that's super critical to your business, or if you have a line of business application that you need this to integrate with so that you can keep track of these sites or know what these sites are in reference to, you have the ability to just specify your own custom form that the users are presented with instead of the default one that we provide out of box. I think we're going to have to... Oh, there it is. So real quick, this is where I can make it required. I can specify where these sites belong. If I run out of space at a location, I can spin up a new one. And I also have that ability, as I mentioned, to use a custom form. And go ahead and I'll click OK, and we're configured. So the admin side of our demos are done. I'm going to do a quick recap of the key information that you should be aware of. So we talked about Record Center, creating these site collections, having a distributed archive. Well, there are some limits or some checkpoints you should be available or should be aware of. First off, 3,000 site collections. And I actually really want to emphasize, in the current release of Office 365, that number is 300. So we've gone from 300 to 3,000 in this next upgrade wave. So this should offer plenty of opportunity for you to have a large archive, to have lots of information. Every single one of those site collections can be up to 100 gigabytes, which on average is around 350,000 Office documents. So a lot of space available. Also, up to 25 terabytes of pooled storage. And I want to emphasize the word pooled. Pooled is the site collection storage that you have available in that UI that we went through, where you can assign it to a site collection that the administrator has created. The actual users also get 7 gigabytes each for their SkyDrive Pro. So those are independent. So this is your pooled quota availability, but there's also user quota. And so coming back to our Contoso example, with 1,000 E licenses and 900K licenses, you'd have 500 gigs of pooled storage available for you to assign to your record centers, to your team site. On top of that, you're going to have 3,000 site collections you can spread it across, and every single one of your enterprise users has 7 gigs of personal storage. All of that storage is stored in the Office 365 system, which is compliant with some of the most needed world-class compliance, all verified by third parties. It's a very reliable place to store your data. And with that, I'll hand it over to Adam, who's going to talk about sort of the end user experience.
Great, yeah. So what Zach just showed was how you make Office 365 come alive with the personal Active Directory and your users. Then we sort of looked at wiring up an organizational record center, an organizational place, namely a record center, and we also looked at applying a little bit of containment and control to the team spaces. Let's flip back and see how all that is manifested when it comes to the end user experiencing Office 365. So I will go back to the demo and looked at the record center, site policies. So, you know, now that we have sunk Active Directory with this new Office 365 tenant, anybody in the organization can go and they can get a SkyDrive Pro location. So if they were just to log in, set up their password, or if they're using single sign-on, they don't even need to set up their password, and they would click on SkyDrive Pro, it would go ahead and give them their personal space for sharing documents. It would normally take about 1 to 2 minutes when the first time you click on it, you get a little, hey, I'm setting it up. I skip that for the purpose of keeping things snappy and making progress through the demos today. Now, let's talk about how this applies from an ECM context. For the one hand, this is a SharePoint document library, so everything like auditing and policies and expiration and being able to do e-discovery over these things are all baked in and part of this. It just naturally comes with Office 365. Of course, when we thought about how to design this and how to tweak it, I know many of you in this room are starting to compete more heavily with Dropbox and SkyDrive and other consumer-based applications, and there are people in your organization that are naturally starting to go ahead and use those for work purposes. And there's, you know, the consumerization IT is the typical thing you would call this in this battle there. And so when we thought about SkyDrive Pro and how it applies from an ECM context, the most important thing was that you have the ability to dial up and down the ability to compete effectively with those consumer tools while also being able to have compliance on the back end. And so that manifests itself in a couple different ways. First, I'll just go ahead and get a couple pieces of content in my SkyDrive Pro account. I think you've all seen drag and drop demoed before. I think I demoed with my left hand today. I was going to try to do it behind the back just to shake it up, but couldn't do it in the dry run. And so you can see, first off, sharing is front and center, right? And you can tell that by default this is locked. This is only shared with you. And we wanted to make sure that people had a very good idea of who they were sharing the content with. Of course, even a couple minutes ago, I couldn't have shared this with people in my organization because we hadn't sunk Active Directory. But in just a couple minutes of importing that in, we can invite people in here. Let's see if you... Did you add the me and you, or should I do test user? Right. Okay. Well, we'll try to add me. Sort of depends. If we had about 1,000 users, we were syncing and see how many got in. If not, I can go ahead and add test user one.
Or not.
Or not. Test user eight. All right, well. So we can figure out what's going on in just a second. But the important thing here is if Active Directory Sync is successful, you can immediately start adding people from your organization. But, you know, going back to the sort of Dropbox and SkyDrive CoCompete, by default, and this can be configured and turned off, you can also share externally from outside your enterprise. So the SkyDrive Pro ends up being a place where you can share with people that aren't part of your Active Directory. And this is obviously configured. I think Jeff sent something to test at test.com, so we'll go ahead and do that. And I'm actually not going to require sign-in for this user at all. So you can require sign-in, and they can sort of link a Microsoft account, and they can get access to this content. But in this particular case, maybe I'm sharing something that's decently low business impact, just some sort of shipping receipt with a customer or something like that. And I can go ahead and share it with them. And they'll get an email, basically, with a unique link. And so if I go back and take a look at this, I'll show you, see any open to anyone with a guest link. And so you can copy paste this link around, and anybody externally could access this document now without any sign-in. You can revoke this right by just sort of deleting this link here, or as admins, you can say, no, you know what, I'm not comfortable with this, so I'm only comfortable with this in these ad hoc team sites versus, you know, obviously my corporate record center. That would almost certainly be a place where you would disable it. And so the real key takeaway here is, I think from a cloud perspective, this feature is technically available on-prem in some particular cases, although punching through the firewall and getting that all working, it's probably more likely used for sharing guest links just within your enterprise. But in the cloud, of course, if sharing externally is something that you have a common scenario for, obviously this is much easier to set up. You don't have to punch through firewalls, et cetera, et cetera. But we also have the tools to be able to dial that up and down for your particular organization. And it allows you to effectively compete with the more consumer-facing tools. And so you can be able to, if people demand that they be able to share externally, and yet you want the e-discovery on the back end, that's possible. So that's a quick tour of the personal space. Didn't quite work from the demo perspective, but you can see that the site comes alive with your users in Active Directory. Let's move on to the team spaces. And so Zach mentioned easy self-service site creation. So I can go ahead and create a new site here. And this is just a site for a project, people to work on project. So I can, you know, Contoso Shipping, Next Voyages, let's say it's sort of tracking the next ships to leave. And you can pick the most appropriate policy. So these three policies that you saw Zach set up a couple minutes ago manifest itself to the end user right here, where they can pick an HBI project or just say this is a short-lived project. And for this case, we'll just say a regular project. And so you can start seeing how you can apply policy containment. We want to make it really easy to create a site, but also make sure that all the content stays fresh. So if the site isn't needed anymore, it'll be retired. So as I create this site, what I'm going to do is I'm going to activate a couple apps on the site. I don't think this will be a surprise to anyone about the new app model. But I'll activate one or two just to sort of show you that it's possible, so I can start making the site come alive. You know, working on a deadline, I'll go ahead and add tasks and timeline. If you went to my site mailbox talk yesterday, you know that you can coordinate the mail experience about a project with the project team site itself. So I'll go ahead and activate the site mailbox app. And we'll actually sort of show this manifesting itself to the end user a little bit later, but I'll go ahead and activate that right now. But it's actually calling out to Exchange and setting up a mailbox for this particular site. But what I want to do next is add a couple documents. I think I've already dude behind the back. I could try with one leg to drag and drop something in. And then I'm going to show you archiving it through a record center. So this will take just 1 second to finish setting up the mailbox. While it's doing that, I'll go ahead and get my documents ready. Oops. And so that's all done. We'll go back to documents here. I'll add a couple in here. Let's see. And so we've effectively made this site come alive really quickly and easily with adding new content and activating apps so you can go with the team site. Of course, there's a whole session on how to actively use team sites and project management. This was sort of just a brief overview. But let's go ahead and select one of these, go to Files, and send to Record Center. You notice even though we have, as Zach was pointing out, 3, 4, or 5 record centers in the back end, We only expose one to the end user, because a content organizer in this central record center is going to federate and farm out all the content to the child record center. So that's one of the ways you can scale behind 100 gigabytes for your record center. So if I go ahead and do this, you'll see we'll create a stub as per the policy that Zach defined. And so in the cloud, we're actually taking a piece of content and archiving it to the record center. So it's actually worth, if you want to geek out and look at the URL, you'll notice that it went to the RC 2012, even though that wasn't the actual record center that we specified. We specified the generic records. It went there. It checked some routing rules to say, hey, this was created in the year 2012. Let me send there. As I mentioned, we could have been examining other metadata like department or et cetera, right? And if I go back, you can see, as you would on-prem ever since 2010, if I were to click on this, I'll get a little, hey, this is moved, and I can go and find it. And so a brief tour of what we just saw. You saw the site starting to come alive with end users from your organization. So within a couple minutes, you can start making Office 365 feel like something that's part of your organization. For the team sites, we saw ad hoc policy added to it that's available on-prem as well as in the cloud. And then, as is new for the cloud that wasn't available in previous versions of Office 365, we showed you creating a record center and then archiving content to it. So that is a brief tour of some of the admin and then end user value parts of ECM. It's interesting. Like we would be spending hours here if we were going to talk about all of the ECM functionality. We picked the ones that we showed because we thought that was some of the good getting started stuff. Record centers in particular are new, so we focused on that. And we wanted to keep just pick a couple to be able to show. But I do want to sort of stress that these five talks going on, some of them have already occurred, some of them will occur, are all ECM heavy talks, and all of them are demoing from the cloud. I believe the first four are 100% cloud, and that's the only demo environment. And the last one, if you attended it, they actually have Lincoln gave a really interesting conversation about what's available on-prem versus what's in the cloud. And hopefully everybody going to that talk walked away with knowledge that there's serious KM that can be done in the cloud. We're going to go through a couple of these when we talk about the vignettes later. But if you combine this together with the demos we just saw, hopefully you can see some serious ECM scenarios coming alive. I wanted to take a second, though, to talk about a couple things. First, I think traditional relationship me as on the ECM team has had with the SharePoint community is once every couple years we talk about what's new with ECM, we celebrate with a party in Mandalay Bay, and then we work on the next version. Of course, for ECM in the cloud, that relationship that I think we're going to have with one another is going to dramatically change. We update the cloud every 90 days. We do quarterly updates. And so it's worth putting in your mind thinking about how to keep up to date. If you sign up for Office 365, you get emails about what's coming new with every quarterly update. Obviously, our blog is an excellent place. And what you see on here is sort of the remaining things on our radar for future parity concerns. Record Center used to be on that list. It's no longer on that list. Wanted to show this to you because we want to be open and transparent with the community about what currently is not exactly the same between on-prem and the cloud. So for instance, if auditing of view events is incredibly important for a particular scenario, that may not be a workload today that you want to move immediately to Office 365. Of course, it's something you want to continue to check in with us on. So putting this all together, what you see here is basically a lot of the features you've seen or are familiar with from SharePoint 2010 or will be mentioned in other talks today dealing with ECM. So I didn't mention a couple yet, or we didn't show, but content type syncing has been available in the cloud. Doc sets are there. We just showed Send to an Archiving and the Content Organizer. I gave a talk on site mailboxes, and we showed a little bit of configuring that. Rights management. And so really, like, the one thing I want you to take away is that incredible amount of functionality that people are used to on-prem for ECM is available in Office 365. And so I think those are the list of features. I hate to be too feature-centric, so I want to make sure that there's good buckets. Records management compliance, an end-to-end scenario workload you could move. Document management as well, if you have a spec or process library with workflow. And then knowledge management, Lincoln's talk, for actually having a rich website that rolls up the most interesting content in your enterprise. All three are completely end-to-end complete scenarios. Hopefully, I've convinced you of that through the demo and through some of the rest of the talks that you'll give. or that you'll see at this conference. So that was the, I promised you that the talk was broken up into two parts. That's the first part, where we sort of blast you with a whole bunch of features that are available, hopefully, and some end-to-end completeness. What we wanted to do for the remainder of the talk is talk about how the cloud is changing the ECM game. And so we looked at a whole bunch of things. We sort of examined as engineers what we've been building and how we've been talking about it. And we sort of came up with four big trends, principles, call them whatever you want, that will impact both how we design features as well as how you should think about ECM. And so the way we're going to tackle this is we're going to do quick vignette demos, one for each one, and then talk a little bit about the principles that are on the page here. So these demos aren't sort of scenario end-to-end complete, but they just hopefully demonstrate a key principle and then move on. So without further ado, let's get started on that. We're going to demo the first two and then move back to slides. So the first one is config agility, how easy it is and how dynamic it is to configure SharePoint Online. And then the second one is cross-product. But to talking about config agility, which is a term I totally made up, just for the record. It's not a real thing. We're going to show how easy it is to get started with IRM. So I actually, back in a previous job, I owned the rights management stack for the clients, Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. And working with a lot of people that were deploying rights management, one of the, frankly, blocking factors to RMS and IRM was that it wasn't the easiest thing to deploy. Especially when you, sort of not by any fault of any particular engineer, but by just the notion of, you have to do key management, and there's a lot of sort of security and encryption and trust. And so I want to show you basically in just a couple minutes how easy it is to get going and enable the rights management workload from within Office 365, something that probably would have taken server installations and meetings and et cetera, et cetera. So to do that, we'll go to the Office 65 Preview Admin Center that Zach showed and started off the demo with. And I'll go to Service Settings. And then there's this Protect tab. And there's a little bit of a, since we're in preview, we haven't updated this page yet. Once this is out of preview, you'll be able to click a link on this page that will take you to this page. But we haven't put that link on the other page yet. And there's a blog post that will basically give you the URL you need to go to. It's a quick little workaround. But it'll be fixed by the time we are in general availability. And so before, you might have had to install a server, configure key management, and do all that. Right now, all you have to do is hit Activate. Do you want to activate rights management? You bet I do. And so that activates it for all of Office 365. It activates it for Exchange. And that's not something we'll show today, but obviously, most rights management today is actually within email. And so we'll go ahead and do that. But let's go back to SharePoint. And now that it's been activated for all of Office 365, it's also just a couple clicks to activate it for SharePoint as well. Go back to that same settings page that Zach was showing earlier to configure other things. And I can say use the IRM service specified in your configuration. I can refresh the IRM settings. Sometimes it takes just a second to propagate through the system. We will give it the second it needs. Well, maybe we'll give it more than just 1 second. Well, I'll do some talking points while we let it think. After this is done, we're actually going to go and show a couple new features of IRM. The biggest one is we're actually going to show IRM rendering in the web apps. So before, if you tried to open an IRM document in the web apps, it would just say, hey, I don't know how to open this type of file. Now, we can't edit necessarily, but we can... we can view IRM docs. And second, there's a whole talk on IRM. Barack Cohen has given it. It's going to be an awesome talk. He also talks about our emerging support for PDF files for IRM as well, and that's something that'll work in Office 365. So assuming I stalled long enough, we will give it... Yeah, we successfully refreshed your settings. Awesome. Let's hit OK here. And now let's sort of show this in action by going back to the site that I created just a couple minutes ago and enabling IRM on the library. So we're totally going all the way down the stack. We went from Office 365 to the SharePoint Admin Center, then we'll go to the particular site that we were working with. So the shipping, Next Voyages, that was the one. And I'm going to go to the document library. And if you're familiar with this, all the way from Office 2007, which was never available in 365 before, but now is, you can see this Information Rights Management tab. Actually, sort of, you can go to Barack's session and see all the extra settings we've added as a quick bonus one. In 2007 and 2010, you could rights manage a file just to the individual user. It was like a real-time rights management that was added upon download, and that person couldn't share the file with anybody else. Now you can add basically a group such that you can download a file, and anybody in that group has access to that rights managed document, allowing it a little more collaboration outside of SharePoint if necessary. All the strict permissions on this library, just to show what's going on. Contoso, confidential, do not distribute externally. And I will go ahead and click OK there. And then if I go back to this document and try to open, for instance, this one in the web app, you'll see that the rights management information policy that I specified just a couple seconds ago appears as a banner. And so this is being actively rights managed. Full disclosure, we actually don't block screen capture in the world web apps right now. And so if this is something you're looking at, you'll still have to make that trade-off. You can disable rights management available in the WAC too, right? So some people have to download it to the client. And for the purpose of the cloud, if I were to open this in the client, and I now have Sunk AD, so I have an Office 365 account, we would be able to then get the full power of rights management, everything from blocking edit and graying out the right elements of the ribbon and everything like that. So I hope what this showed, and we'll sort of come back to it later, but this is the end of Vignette 1. But just in a couple minutes, I got going with Office 365 rights management, something that I think in an on-prem world would have taken a lot more setup and config. And this is one element of it, and maybe this saves a little bit of time, but time and time again, for a lot of the workloads you want to set up, the cloud can save a dramatic amount of time. And I guess I'll just sort of complete my thoughts here on this key tenet. One of the takeaways from Config Agility I want you to take, in addition to just generically saving time, is that I think it allows you all to start prototyping and doing things on a department level quicker. So if you're thinking about deploying records management, you can, if you want, of course, think about an enterprise-wide deployment. But the tax to set up and get going here is small enough that you can also consider prototyping and doing it ad hoc at a department level, seeing what works. Running experiments, doing one type of in-place records management, the other type is a sort of archival record center, and see what's going. And you don't actually have to worry as much about all the impedance and friction to getting going and trying that. So I think the config agility part really has sort of two elements of it. A, to save time, and B, I really hope it encourages more of a sort of A-B testing and casual trying out of new things in the ECM scenario, something that I really actually don't think has been possible before. So that's the principle number one. Let's move on to principle number two, which I call cross-workload. So we're incredibly serious about bringing Exchange and SharePoint together for joint scenarios. I think Site Mailboxes and eDiscovery are the two we've focused on for 2013, and I think we're just getting started there personally. And I think the cloud is really a great enabler for us to deliver this value quicker. And so as a quick showing of how serious we are about cross-workload support, I'm going to go ahead and show you a little bit of the eDiscovery features that are available in Office 365, as well as on-prem. So Quentin Christensen did a whole talk on everything involved in eDiscovery. What you see here is the joint eDiscovery center and a joint place for lawyers to go to manage eDiscovery across Exchange, SharePoint, and Link. In Office 365, you need one of these for the entire Office 365 deployment, mail, docs, and IM conversations combined. So I'm not going to go into a whole amount of detail here, but you can see there's this process where you can put stuff on hold and without getting in the way of the end user. And if you're not familiar with this feature set, definitely check out Quentin's recording. But what I'll do, just to sort of quickly demonstrate as a vignette, is I'll go into this, this search that we've already sort of pre-saved, which has, as you can tell as it's loading, it has a couple mailboxes. It also has a SharePoint site. So if I go and I click on SharePoint, you can see a rich amount of content coming back. And I'm just going to go ahead and export it. But, there's a couple default settings that I'll accept. I'm going to go ahead and download the results. So it's going to have a quick login screen. If we're lucky, it'll just do it automatically. And what's going on here? Let me just create a new folder, live on stage. That way it doesn't conflict with the previous run of this. And so this actually launched the client application that will run on the lawyer's desktop for accessing content from Office 365. So I need to log into Exchange. I guess that's how you can figure out that this is cross-product. Now it's my turn to have you watch me enter a password on stage. And so there's a couple interesting points here. I'll sort of let this run, but to be perfectly honest, it could take a while to download the content from the cloud, longer than we have, so I will go ahead and show you what the export eventually will look like. It's right here. So cross-workload. We're grabbing this export tool grabs data from Exchange, grabs data from SharePoint, puts it on a lawyer's desktop. Also, it was interesting. I'll sort of share, as an engineer, when we knew we needed to build export, I actually think we chose a different architecture and design, knowing that we needed to design for both on-prem and the cloud. I think if we were designing for an on-prem world, we probably would have written a server-side component that exported to a locally stored file share and just called it a day, and it wouldn't have been a client application. But because we were designing for both on-prem and the cloud, we looked at all the options available, and the easiest, simple architecture that worked across both was a quick client application that could reach in using the lawyer's credentials and grab all the data. So I don't know. I thought it was just an interesting thing to share about how we evolve and change the architectures we choose now that we're designing both for the cloud and on-prem world. And so, you know, if you want to sort of take a look in there, there's actually two queries in here. We can see the Exchange PST files that we've exported, as well as SharePoint document libraries. And all the content in there. So you can see where we're sort of capturing both and bringing it together. So switch back to the PowerPoint and just sort of summarize what we just saw. Wrong keyboard. We saw config agility, allowing you to prototype ECM solutions without having to go make one bet on something that has to succeed. And then the cross-workload solutions, I think, is a trend that we currently are embracing and will continue to embrace going forward. We'll continue to talk about the Office 365 suite. So the next two are hybrid and the app model. I don't think that'll be anybody surprised that when we talk about the cloud, we're going to be talking about both of those. So let's go back into demo. And I will show you one vignette that shows another investment that we've made in hybrid. You actually already saw a huge investment in hybrid, which is basically syncing Active Directories that Zach showed earlier. Like, that is step one to a hybrid environment, and obviously shows our commitment to hybrid. The other major investment in hybrid that we made this release is in search. So I'm going to go in remote desktop into and you saw me practicing. I'm going to undo that. So what I have here is this environment. Let's say that this particular customer has started onboarding some of their workloads to the cloud. Maybe they've taken Collab, but left their corporate knowledge management system, but brought their news portal up, and those types of things. Search, of course, the value prop of search is that it will find the information no matter where it's stored. And so I have actually two search centers here. Here's an on-prem search center, and here's one that's stored in the cloud. And if I were to search, I know that this Contoso shipping company does work with somebody called Blue Yonder. And so I'll type Yonder into this. And you'll see a result block at the top that is results from Office 365 for on-prem. So this is actually federating the query from the on-prem search system to the cloud search system and getting results back. So these first three results are things that the search system thinks are relevant from the cloud. And then here's the more traditional on-prem results. And so this result block that allows federated queries to appear is actually pretty dynamic. So we've run this demo often enough that people realize, or the search system realizes, that these are really important pieces of content, so it's filtered the result block up to the top. At first, though, it might be the result 4 or 5, right? So this result block and hybrid support for being able to search on-prem in the cloud is dynamic, and we'll filter up and down depending on what's needed. Of course, the other way around is completely possible as well. So here's my cloud search center. And if I were to search, you'll see first we'll see on-prem results, and then below that, the results from the cloud. And so just a powerful statement about a commitment to hybrid and going forward over the long time. I think especially ECM, I'm going to just be transparent, I think it'll probably be one of the latter workloads brought to the cloud. I think it's absolutely ready, but I know I've heard from a lot of customers that it's Collab tends to be one of the first workloads to bring. SkyDive Pro will be another workload. And while we're in that interstitial state, I think one of the real advantages of betting on Microsoft is our support and commitment for hybrid solutions going forward. So that's vignette 3. the last vignette that I want to talk about today is the notion of the app model. How many people have heard of the app model, attended at least one thing on the app model? So you know, basically, similar to install on your phone, for SharePoint, you can get apps that make your site come alive, either internally created by your IT department and pushed out, or of course consumed from a SharePoint store by one of the partners of SharePoint. So I'll go ahead and quickly show how we can add an ECM type of app to the SharePoint site that I've been working with. So I'm going to go back home. And this is the site I've been working on. I'm actually going to go and add an app. And I'm going to, I could have seen apps here that were created by my IT department, like I said. Pablo is giving a session later today on the how to create ECM apps. And he's taking you through a classic app example of when you upload a particular piece of document, be very dynamic about filling it out with metadata. So it actually will look up the current uploader's information in the profile store and automatically fill out the department that that person is involved with. So it shows remote event handlers, and it shows how to package that up in an app. I highly recommend you go to his talk later today. He's a dev on the on our engineering team, super smart, and you'll learn a ton about IT developed app models. For this demo, I'll go ahead and show you the SharePoint store. And the biggest takeaway I have for you here is that there is no doubt and no question the app model is designed for our biggest ECM partners and the biggest ECM scenarios. There, you know, as we move from app model, of course, everybody has questions over what types of apps are possible, and are the apps that were possible on-prem, possible for the cloud, all those types of things. And we are committed, and we're already seeing traction in the very traditional ECM players and very traditional ECM partners bringing apps to the cloud. And we know that for a lot of ECM scenarios, a partner is an option that's included in the mix. Not always required, of course. I think we have very complete end-to-end scenarios, but we do see a lot of traction bringing partners in. And our goal right now is to move them onto the app model. I think it provides a huge amount of opportunity to market their products, right? Because they can get out and with the SharePoint store, they don't only have to have a communication with you through email or through the booth, but they can actually get the content in your face. And then, in addition, of course, the SharePoint store allows an end user to start consuming these applications and choosing the one they want much more readily than they could have before. So as an example, Nintex has a prototype in the marketplace today of their workflow solution. So I'm going to go ahead and add it to my Office 365 tenancy. Sorry, I didn't have that logged in before. And what we're going to go through is basically go through the process of acquiring and making that app available in my entire Office 365 tenancy, and then actually add it to the site that I was just looking at. So it's going to go ahead and do that, and I'm going to have to give it permissions. And so the biggest takeaway here is that the app store will be full of different ECM vendor solutions as they offload particular. Everything from records management, Outlook integration, to extending the workflow platform, those types of things. So if I go ahead and launch this app, the one thing that I want to show is that this is not just an iframe to some external server that has no ability to interact natively with SharePoint. So if you'll see the activities that'll load, some of them are directly applicable to the site that I'm currently in. So I can add a workflow stage to this workflow system that is going to update a piece of metadata or have a remote event receiver. And so we'll let this load a little second. I only just really want to show the home screen, basically. And so this is the important thing to take away about the app model is that it fundamentally and deeply integrates with the SharePoint sites you're working with. So I can see some of the list actions here that we can do. We can actually check items out, check it out. And so these workflows run natively in SharePoint. So going back to the PowerPoint, we'll look at the four principles that we wanted to end the talk with. The configagility, allowing you to prototype. The cross-workload solution is going to continue to be a focus for us and enable us to take some pretty complex technologies and abstract all the auth protocols away from you and make it our problem. Hybrid will continue to be a reason to bet on Microsoft, as you don't. We know that nobody's going to move their entire system from day one. And the safe sandbox and componentized extension model really democratizes the ECM marketplace in a way that's never been possible before. And so those are four principles. And then remember the first part of the talk where we were showing you all the out-of-the-box value of ECM. We have one final demo that is sort of going to hopefully put it all together and just really demonstrate the power and simplicity of the cloud. So Zach, if you want to go ahead and get started on that.
So I'm sure you've all seen by now the site mailbox feature. The thing that we wanted to stress is not only the four principles all coming together in one, but foremost is how easy this is to onboard with Office 365. And so I'm just showing this is effectively my first time launching the Outlook app, but I've been invited to use my Office 365 email as well as be a part of these site mailboxes that are already part of my system. And so it's as simple as coming into Outlook, adding an account. Obviously, I need to type in my information. And we're going to try passwords one more time.
Getting good at it.
So this is reaching out to the Office 365 hosted Exchange, gathering the information around who I am and attempting to configure Outlook same way any other email account would work. And this works both with the hybrid story that Adam explained as well as with just a complete Office 365 connection. So I go ahead and finish. It's going to restart Outlook because it wants to reset up my profile. We're going to go into that account. And that first time, you've got to log in again. And once I do this, it'll work just like Outlook, holding onto my credentials locally. But you'll see, I knew I was going to fail at that password at least once.
Yeah, I was just about to celebrate how we typed it right every time.
Assuming I got that right, it's going to go ahead and set up Outlook here. And so this is effectively the point that you've seen most of your demos starting from. So most people have already set up. They've already set up their site. They've already set up their inbox. You see it's already starting to connect, updating information. And this is just the normal first boot of Outlook. So it's going to first go and get my email. You can see the standards. It's setting itself up. And in just a second, we will see the site mailboxes for all the different projects that this user is already a part of. And so this is sort of bringing together the configagility, which is Adam's new term, but really the speed of the configuration. And so we basically took this from a blank tenant. We set up users. We brought in information. And here are the various projects. Next Voyages was the one we looked at today. And you'll see that the information that Adam posted to that site mailbox will already be available in Outlook for this user within seconds.
Yeah, so I mean, I get, there we go, thank you. I mean, we get a lot of skepticism too over some of the cross-product workload and that type of integration. And how easy is it to get going and configure? Do I have to hold a lot of meetings before I get going? And really, I wanted to end on this demo because we started with a blank tenant that you could get today at office.com/preview. We did a couple account syncing, and we sort of built it up. And by the end of it, you have our hallmark ECM feature for end users, this release, site mailboxes, working in Outlook and configured together. So let's wrap up, and let's see how we're doing on time. Just about perfect. We got about 10 minutes left, so that'll be some good time for questions. I think I've already drilled home the takeaways, but it can't. Might as well say it one more time. Office 365 is ready for your serious ECM workloads. You can bring major enterprise ones there. You can start prototyping and see what's going to work best. And I think with these key principles, Office 365 is really moving ECM in a completely new direction. It's changing the game. And so I think I already completed the advice. I'll be rapid and iterative. And also realize we're making updates to every 90 days. So please keep... keep tabs on all the great progress we're going to be making going forward, too. So I think we'll do questions from the mic. I will say feedback is super important. My manager looks at it. Zach's manager looks at it. Really appreciate it if you filled it out. And we're eager for your feedback. Let's start with some questions.
Yeah, I really like the federated search result blocks. I can kind of see, as I think about it, why you didn't do this, but do you have any plans to allow all the content to be indexed in one index so that it's not in a federated result block, but all together? In other words, across on-prem and in the cloud?
Yeah, the question is, can we have one index to rule them all, essentially, that would have all of them together? So I will refer you to Brad Stevenson's hybrid talk, and you should find Brad at Ask the Expert. He is our search hybrid expert guru. This is what we have available today, and this is the current solution. You can talk to him about the pros and cons of that going forward, but we're certainly not announcing that or saying that's the strategy today. So okay. Brad's the right guy to follow up at Ask the Experts, though. Brad Stevenson.
Thank you.
Let's alternate microphones.
In all the sessions on cloud content management that I've heard, there's been very little discussion of the issue of content migration. Mm-hmm. So in terms of best practices, what are your thoughts on migrating large-scale legacy content into the cloud and then return trip if after being in place for several years and building up the corpus in the cloud, you decide to bring it back on-premise? How do you bring it back?
Yeah, do you want to?
So it's obviously a challenge. At the moment, there are a lot of great third-party tools available that have built a lot of infrastructure around both pushing data into Office 365 as well as pulling data out of Office 365. I don't think I can say more than it's something that is very important to us, making sure that people can get on and off the service as they need, and something that we will continue to invest in. But at the moment, the third-party tool sets, there's a list of them, and if you find me later or at Ask the Experts, I can help you get a hold of that list, are what we have available today.
So the best practice is
buy a tool? The best practice, it depends on your specific scenario around what you're trying to do. If you're trying to replicate your on-premises environment in the cloud, that is most likely your best option. If it's simply a matter of pushing the data online, there are some potential sync-related options, but they're generally just about pushing data, which isn't necessarily what most folks want. You want the metadata. You want all the rich information to come with it, and at the moment, it is by a tool.
And this is by all means not a full solution to your problem at all, but the eDiscovery demo I showed today certainly can be used by lawyers. But one of the reasons I showed it is it doesn't need to be only used by lawyers. I think it's a generic data export for HR investigations or other such things. It is one way of getting data both out of Exchange and SharePoint. By all means, I agree with you, not a full migration story. That's where we look at partners and various other things. But I hope and expect that eDiscovery tool to be used more for than just the classic scenario of eDiscovery. On the side?
Hi. We are heavy users of My Sites in 2010. And as you know, each one of those is a site collection. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier that in the SkyDrive Pro model, it didn't sound like My Sites were site collections, like each user's drive space was not a site collection. Is that true?
In SkyDrive Pro, I think I heard the question was, are they still site collections?
Yes.
They are still site collections. It is a similar infrastructure to the number. What I was really getting at is that you have a limit on the number of team site collections, record center site collections. Your My Site site collections are independent. And so when we say there's only 3,000 site collections, I want to make sure everyone realizes that doesn't mean you can only have 3,000 SkyDrive Pro sites. You can have a SkyDrive Pro site for every single one of your enterprise users. It is a complete site collection as it was in 2010. And then in addition, you have an additional number of site collections.
And what is the quota on those SkyDrive Pro
sites? It is 7 gigabytes per.
That's not changeable.
At the moment, that is not changeable. I will defer to the quarterly update comment that Adam made before. We've heard feedback on that before. At the moment, it is just 7 gigs.
What's that?
Hi there. Just another question on the site collections. You mentioned there was a limit of 3,000. I just wanted to understand, is that applied to shared or is it for dedicated environments?
That is just for the Office 365 shared. Dedicated has significantly more. If you need more than that, please come talk to us or talk to your Microsoft account rep if you have one. It is something that we can discuss. So if you have a scenario under which you need more than 3,000, we'd actually just really like to understand under what reasoning you go to that number. Okay.
Thank you.
Yes,
what is the preferred method now for syncing documents down to a device such as a laptop to carry with you? Is Workspace still an option in the future, or is it now through the Outlook syncing?
So SkyDive Pro is a syncing technology. If you run it, you notice some UI from SharePoint Workspace. It's based upon that code path. Let's see if I can switch over to the demo real quick. It's actually super simple for an end user. Let's go to sites. Probably already have one open somewhere. Actually, let's go back to site. And so I just click the sync button right here. And that's going to launch SkyDrive Pro. You can sort of see it as an icon down here. And that is that's a syncing technology based upon Workspace. And that is the absolute way of taking stuff offline. Don't have time to go into too much detail, but the Outlook thing I showed today actually doesn't take it offline. That's links and stubs to the content in SharePoint. But if you take it offline with SkyDrive Pro, then you get offline access. You double-click it in Outlook, and it opens too. So that's where you should put your effort. There is a whole talk on SkyDrive Pro that you should check out as well.
Okay, and some of the Workspace issues were, you know, if you had extra columns, a metadata column, or there was added, there was a limit. I mean, has that all been resolved?
The focus of SkyDrive Pro is really offline access and sort of making it look like a virtual My Documents. It's not necessarily a place to take a list offline or sort of do metadata edits or consider it an offline copy of the SharePoint site. It's an offline copy of the documents that you can access. And so that's the focus. Tejas right there is the expert on SkyDrive Pro, and so you should probably have an offline conversation with him about all the gritty details.
Just one more quick one with the integration of email and SharePoint. Is there a mechanism to be able to have somebody email a document to somebody and have that document automatically added to a library on the cloud?
I'm going to go well off demo script and probably shouldn't, but for instance, if you take something from here and you forward it, it is going to forward a link to the document, and so that's sort of one way there too. To get it into the library, it's more of a drag and drop option from the attachment into the site mailbox and Outlook.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Let's see, how are we doing? Two more questions, and then we'll probably wrap up.
So everything that you've shown is kind of from the SharePoint and side of things, where you've got content in SharePoint, and then you're using Office 365 through a web interface to open and view that content. How integrated is this with the full Office suite that resides on your desktop, and specifically on a Mac?
On the Mac?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's... talking about the PC clients, I can't think of too many differences between on-prem and cloud connection with the Office clients. For the Mac, I'm actually not super familiar. Tejas, I don't know if you know. You can follow up at Ask the Experts. I don't believe there's too many differences between on-prem and cloud as far as client integration goes, to the best of my knowledge. So the question is, generically, what's the Mac support for connecting to SharePoint?
And also, how much of the richness of the content management functions will you actually get through the desktop clients Office suite?
If you find me at Ask the Experts, I can go find the Mac guys, and we can have a good conversation and figure it out together if you want.
Okay.
I don't know offhand.
You'll be there later today?
Yeah, at Ask the Experts tonight. I'll be at the ECM table.
Yep.
Last question, and then we'll stand, we can do the hover thing and ask private questions.
Okay. Putting the site library, the site in Outlook, the integration with Outlook.
Yeah.
You have policies on those sites. Those sites are going to expire after 3 months, 6 months, or whatever. Does the system clean up behind itself, or do you get stuck with all these orphan?
Yep. I did a session yesterday. You can watch the recording on site mailboxes, but absolutely. We would be introducing a management headache if we didn't clean that up. That's one of the things we thought was super important. So when you retire or just frankly ad hoc delete a site that has a site mailbox attached to it, there's a cleanup process for getting rid of that mailbox as well. Well, thank you all. We'll be up front for some private questions. Really appreciate you sharing out today. Thanks.